I'm going to talk about embracing and celebrating redundancy, not in your job, but in what you do. And when you read the description that you have in your leaflets, that was for a one-hour talk before they told me it's going to be half an hour. So I'm like, okay, got to short it a bit. I always strive to be redundant in my job sooner or later. I strive to share my information with the people that work with me so I can get sick, so I can get run over by a bus. Not that I want that, but it might happen. And the project doesn't suffer from it. And as geeks, we always have this problem that once we solved something, we want to keep being that guy that does that one thing and knows it, and nobody else does. And that's a very, very bad attitude if you want to progress in your career, and if you want to progress as somebody who actually wants to learn other technologies. Maybe something new will come around the corner that is not JavaScript, and you're the JavaScript guy that has to do everything, because nobody else wants to understand what you do or does. This is a key that you get from Avis in America if you rent a car. So they give you an extra spare key in case the one gets lost and you can still get into your car. The problem is they then actually put both of those keys on one ring that you can't open. So it doesn't stop them from charging you extra from getting this great extra key, but it's just wonderful to see these kind of things that people proudly show you these two keys, and you like, I'm not going to analyze this now because it's going to be too painful for you. But it was interesting. Also that this picture was taken in the Yahoo office, but let's not talk about redundancy. So why was jQuery around? jQuery came up, and we heard the history before a bit, because browsers were actually bad. Browsers were really, really awful. It didn't give us the opportunities we wanted to do anymore. And we had to jump through hoops to make things work. A click handler needed Internet Explorer's click interface, and then the other interface on top of it. And I remember there was this big competition, who does the shortest ad event listener function out there, and lots and lots of clever people did lots and lots of stuff. So jQuery actually came out of that world where the browsers were our stopgap, where we couldn't go where we wanted to go because browsers were crap. So what can you do when you're in an environment like that? You can cater to the lowest common denominator. You can actually write things that only work HTML, CSS, a bit of CSS, not too much, no gradients, everything in images, and then it works in every browser out there. Basically everything we look at when we look at government websites and things out there right now because they got these definitions that people have to follow them. You can block out old browsers, and that's a lot of arrogant things you hear people say right now, like, well, if my users don't have the newest browser, screw them. Like, okay, have you ever talked to a client before, or did you ever meet somebody outside of your living room? Because we cannot force people to buy hardware or upgrade their browser, especially in the case of, like, Safaris or in the case of Internet Explorers. Like, hey, I would love to have Internet Explorer 10. Shame I bought these 6,000 Windows XP licenses a few years ago. So you can't upgrade when it's connected with that. So we cannot just say, we only give it to the newest and coolest, because the newest and coolest is very, very fast, very, very old. Internet Explorer 6 was the coolest thing to do in 2000. There was no other browser to support. This is the end of it. This is the epitome of technology. And only care about that. And when we do that again, we have the same problem. The last option you have is abstract the browser differences into a library. And this is how every JavaScript library started. Base 2 by Dean Edwards was the smallest you could get that basically changed all the differences across the browsers and gave you a level playing field to start playing with it, to start actually writing code rather than knowing how browsers mess up. That was our skill set in the past. Nowadays, luckily enough, with things like jQuery, not anymore. So, because jQuery chose the third option, it created an API that worked around the browser differences for starters. I had a click handler. I didn't have the ad event listener and at whatever Internet Explorer had. I did introduce chaining. It said, like, okay, why do I have to start a new line and repeat the variable that I had before when I could just put a dot in there and make it really, really small to write and really, really simple to look at for people who just started with jQuery. For JavaScript guys, was like, what the hell do you do there? Like 15 levels deep with two anonymous functions calling each other, and you're like, okay, it works, let's not touch it. Replacing the DOM. I mean, I remember the John's talk that the DOM is a mess and showing all the problems that the DOM had, and it replaced it with a simpler interface, which is based on CSS selectors. And that made jQuery a big success in the designer community as well, because they already had to go through that syntax when they put styles onto their page, so you can now use that in JavaScript as well. if it has been the most effective one, can be discussed, especially if you use really, really bad CSS selectors and massively long ones. But it was a way in for people to learn it. And you accessed everything with a CSS selector, so the connection between your design and the JavaScript was there, which was good. It simulated the browser that we always wanted. And a lot of people just say, like, oh, why don't you just put jQuery in the browser then and give it over? Well, it hasn't been documented. People like Microsoft, for example, couldn't use a jQuery because it doesn't come with a EULA and definition from, I don't know, legal stuff. A lot of these things are not as easy as we think they are as geeks. So it was specialized for content manipulation. jQuery was never written to write a 3D shader in JavaScript or to write a massive game in JavaScript. It was basically simple web stuff in the beginning that was hard to do and became much easier. Animating something flying in, having a hover effect that pops something up, dialogues, these things became much, much easier. It was an easy interface for effects and animations. Animation was this magical thing that only a few people knew properly. And then we just put the easing library into jQuery, and all of a sudden everything looked smooth and natural, and it was very easy to do, which also made people use animations for bloody everything then. But that's what we're facing right now with a lot of CSS stuff as well, like the new Flash intro is semantic HTML. It's easier event handling as well, not the, all the problems that we had with event handling before, and that's what I'm going to come back to, actually. And it was Ajax without the X. And because who uses XML in Ajax? And it has asynchronous JavaScript and XML. So when I wrote my Ajax book in 2006, it was all about the XML stuff. And parsing the XML in the browser was an absolute nightmare. So with jQuery, we gave up on that immediately and started loading HTML and later on JSON and JSON depacking, and it was wonderful. So this is all the stuff we wanted in browsers. So it's yummy and lean. Every time somebody, when I showed some JavaScript, said, I can make that shorter in jQuery. And look, it's much healthier. It's not fat. It's like things that work. And I've done it with Perl before. Every Perl developer can show you one line of code that's completely incomprehensible and does millions of things. But everybody got really excited how small and wonderful it is. And when we're happy about something healthy and a healthy snack like that, then you can get a bit overboard. And people do. Nowadays, we abstract on abstraction, on abstraction, on abstraction. You find jQuery plugins that are dependent on other plugins, and hope that you have the right browser of doing it. So every time somebody goes online and says, like, I have this JavaScript problem, the first answer is like, well, use jQuery, I can write you a plugin. How is that person learning something from that? It's basically pushing people into our world that was made for us to make our lives easier, not replace the underlying job that we have to do. Because when you render things out to Internet Explorer 6 and you have a massive chain in your jQuery, you shouldn't be surprised if it performs badly. And a lot of people do that. They actually say, we support Internet Explorer and we use jQuery for that. We don't test on Internet Explorer, we just hope it works. As jQuery tells us, it supports it, totally fine. We don't have to test anything. And that's why you see these animations coming in like that and people just putting like a cup of tea on before the navigation comes into the page. So we abstract on abstraction, and we do that anywhere right now. Node.js does the same thing. Like, oh, you need that library and that dependency and that NPM, and not really understanding or celebrating how simple JavaScript, HTML, and CSS really are, and how powerful they are nowadays in the browsers that we have. So we also have a market shift. It's jQuery was amazingly good to actually support desktop problems, desktop things that we had in websites, in like static pages that became a bit more jazzier by moving things around. But the mobile web is there, and it's a mess, and it's awful because all of a sudden we don't have five browsers to deal with, but we have like a few engines on a multitude of different devices with different providers and different mobile providers that change the interface, and it's a total mess. And that's why it was good to see jQuery Mobile and play with it as well, and especially that it's based on the best qualities of the web, which is progressive enhancement, which is write a website first and then turn it into something else, because you don't want to do hardcore programming for every single device out there. You just go nuts if you try to do that. So just imagine now, what if browsers didn't suck anymore? That would be cool, wouldn't it? And actually, what if it already happened? And we just were so involved in our jQuery, YUI, Dojo, whatever other world, that we didn't even look at what the browsers took from what we actually researched and implemented in the browser. And a lot of that stuff happened, and it just is interesting that people don't flock on it. So jQuery first, to me, hurts browser innovation. jQuery 1, you showed a better way. Everybody said, like, yeah, little library, well, who cares? And then all of a sudden, this is so cool. So many more developers came on the market. jQuery brought a whole slew of new developers into the market. They wouldn't have touched JavaScript after they looked at the DOM standards or something like that. But like, I can do this, I can do an animation, cool. Now I can do JavaScript. The problem is those people then stay there and just use random plugins or try three plugins and then write the next one and does exactly the same as the other ones, just with one little detail differently, instead of extending one of the old ones, because I can write it from scratch, it's better than the other one probably. So it showed a better way to browsers, and we listened and we understood and we did something with it. And now it's time for you to reap the rewards. It's time for you to actually go to the browser vendors, because the door is open. We're interested in how you like jQuery, what the benefits are that should be on the native platform, and it's time to go in and go through that door and talk to browser vendors rather than replacing everything with another abstracted layer of development. It's time to move on and change the native web technology. And both Firefox, Chrome very much so, Opera as well, Microsoft as well. Apple, I think, has developers that are allowed outside of the building from time to time, but I'm not quite sure. We're all listening, and we all want to do the things. And the browser engines that are actually leading the market are open source. It depends on the market, of course, but even Microsoft releases so many things open source right now, which is quite interesting to see and wonderful to see, because I give them a chance again. I think it's unfair to just shut things down because it comes from Microsoft. So there's also a backlash. So yeah, backslash replace S. There's also a backlash. People are already getting tired of the, like, use jQuery for that, use that library for that, use that plugin for that. So there was this blog post lately that showed the jQuery version and the JavaScript version that works in the browsers right now, and showed that with the new stuff, yeah, don't try to read it, it's not really not too small right now, showed that the new things that are in the browser DOM are not that much longer anymore and actually are doing the same things. So that was the main point of that post. I think, though, it's important to go further. It's good that we have the things in the browser right now, but it's actually more interesting to think about a use case shift. The way we use jQuery to make websites shinier and to do things quickly in three lines of code will not fly on a mobile device. It will not be in a device that has a small screen or even a very low latency and these kind of things. So this is, for example, his replacement for $a click and function. So it's an array for each call, document key selector, all blah 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 blah. This is not short. This is not selling it to you guys like, hey, you can do the native thing instead of the $a click. But what it actually does, which annoys me more, is that it does the same thing. So you assign a click handler on every single link in the document. And that is totally not necessary because events bubble up. It's called event delegation, and it's been in the browser since Internet Explorer 5. And we can use that to our advantage. So the other thing that a lot of people do with jQuery is just access a lot of stuff and then change the CSS properties in JavaScript. And that is actually very, very strange, because this, when I started with JavaScript, was a total no-no, because we were all excited about separating HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. So that you put all the styling inside the JavaScript out of a sudden makes it hard to maintain that. Where is that background color coming from? It's not in a CSS file. What's going on there? Oh, you have to hunt through your JavaScript to find where people accessed CSS properties and caused reflows where they weren't necessary. So there's a very tight bond between the structure and the behavior here. And there's lots of DOM walking as well, because it's like, it looks simple, but that all the things, which is not a real handler here, could really, really mean that Internet Explorer has to have like 15,000 recursive functions or for loops that it's actually going through to do that. And it's also presentation in the behavior layer. Your JavaScript should be applied and should be stylable and themable, and not inside the JavaScript. You have to change that color because you don't like red.
Localization, red in Chinese means good luck. Hey, red text, we just deleted all your emails. Good luck to you.
So don't fix this, the look and feel in your JavaScript.
Unless you're parsed, then people forgive you.
You can replace short and complex code with some planning. It's the fetish of saying, like, look, it's 5 lines of code is really not helping, because 2 months down the line, your short code might be completely incomprehensible even to yourself. So it's very important sometimes to just do a function name. Put some things in a variable and cache it in the variable rather than rereading it again. And take this example, a little to-do list. So you say, be happy, and then you know it, and then you clap your hands, and then you repeat that. So that's my to-do list. I have these tick boxes there. When I hover over them, it asks me, do you want to make them tickable? If you click on the second time on it, there's this little X arrow. So it means when you click the second time on it, it will delete that thing. So I can now start clicking them to remove them. And it's using storage. So if I want to go back to that page, I go to another website right now, and which is actually this presentation. And I go back, and it kept the state. So this is actually a to-do list done in JavaScript on the client itself. Easy to do. Probably everybody here of you have done that. Probably everybody of you can do that or download a plugin and not understand it and implement it anyways. So, and this is all done with native JS. So the document query selector is the very, very short and succinct dollar sign. So we have a query selector for a single element or query selector all for the node list. But this is in the browser now, no need for any library at all. So this one does exactly the same as the dollar thing. So I get my to-do list, I get my form, and I get the field where people enter their data in. I then have one event handler on the form that is a submit handler. And when it is submitted, which actually gives you keyboard accessibility and mouse accessibility, something a lot of people forget. I see a lot of people creating submit buttons and do an on-click handler on them rather than a submit handler on the form, because then you press your enter key and nothing happens. And think of users that have to do that. So I create a new list item, put it inside the to-do list, give the tab index of -1, that makes it keyboard accessible as well. Set the field value to nothing, set the focus back to the field so I can start typing in it again, store the state, which is a function that I've written, and prevent the default because I don't want the form to submit. That is all I needed to make the new list items in there, to create the new list items in the to-do list. On the list item click itself, I do one event listener. I one click on the whole UL that is the to-do list. I read out the target, I test that the tag name of the target is the LI, so I know it's been the LI. So in the past, I had to navigate through the browser and make sure it's really the LI, because Safari had a few bugs, but these have all been fixed now. And then I just test if there is a class called done on the element. If it isn't, I add the class called done, so that's the first time I click on the list item. And if it has a class, I remove the list item, because that's the second click that's happening. Class list is a new interface in the browsers now that gives you a simple interface to the classes. It's class list add, class list remove, and class list contains. Basically like add class, remove class, and all the other things in libraries. Now natively in there. It was always a pain to manipulate the class string and find out where the word boundaries are and these kind of things. So that's all now maintained in the browser as an array for you. I store the state, I prevent the default, although there's a list item click, there is no default, but it's probably a good idea to do it. And that's the whole functionality I needed to do for that. Storing and retrieving state, on DOM content loaded, I call retrieve state. On retrieve state basically tests if local storage has a property called to-do list, and if the to-do list is there, I write the inner HTML out there. So my HTML is my database in this case. I just basically take the UL out, put it in storage, and read it out from storage. And that's all that's needed in this case. It's actually succinctly enough. You could have read it out with a memory database and put it into something, but it's a bloody to-do list. You're not going to have 6,000 list items on the page. Otherwise, you don't know how to use a to-do list, really. And the visual candy is all in CSS. A lot of these to-do lists, it would be a plugin, would probably have created lots of spans in there with extra classes in them that you can style and shift around and stuff like that. With CSS after, I can generate content. So I'd use the UTF-8 tick box here that I generate
actually after the li on hover, on focus, or when it has the class of done, which is the class that I apply in JavaScript. I position it absolutely to the right 5 pixels, so it's inside the list. And the same way I create the X once it's been clicked and has the class done, and after in focus. Again, hover and focus for keyboard access and for mouse access. And this is all that was necessary to do that interface. The rest was a bit like rounded corners and stuff like that. So if something is just eye candy and nice to have, like these tick boxes, don't do that in JavaScript. Leave it up to CSS with an after selector, because then bad browsers don't get it at all, and that doesn't hurt anybody. But it actually means that when this tick box has to become the poo sign or a love hotel UTF-8 character, then you don't have to do that in your JavaScript. The person that changes the look and feel of the site knows where to change it. And that's a very, very important step of any development. So the techniques to use write less in this case, event delegation instead of loops. There was not a single loop in that whole thing. And I think it's very, very important to avoid loops when we can. Adding classes to make CSS parse and navigate the DOM. I don't have to go to parent, element, blah, blah, blah. It's like CSS does that for me. It did the magic of CSS selectors is what made jQuery. So why don't we use it in CSS by just applying a class to it and let the CSS parser do the rest for us. Generation of visual fluff in CSS. Good. Keep it there. You don't want to maintain it because you actually can do other things later on. This is a cafe in my neighborhood in London where I'm basically reading my emails every morning, so it means I put on clothes for the day because I work from home. And when I have JavaScript enabled, it now is a clicky, movie, any fadey thing. So this one now, this is the kind of stuff that a lot of designers started learning jQuery for or started using jQuery for. Like they didn't want to have the grumpy JavaScript guy that always wanted to strangle them when they wanted to have animations. They just wanted to do it themselves. And this is basically the site that I built in an hour in the cafe sitting there because I looked at the original site and it was just dreadful. And it starts with sensible HTML structures. We heard that before in the jQuery mobile talk. It is important to think about that HTML because that's where content management systems come in. This is where people edit stuff. This is where other people read it. I learned a lot from ViewSource, and probably all of you out there have. So it's very important to cherish that. And when you do it properly, it gives you so many wonderful handles. So this one has the navigation element with a list in it, and it's just links pointing to targets in the page. You could say it's a one-page application. And there's articles in there with the ID where it points to. So in the browser, keyboard accessible, bookmarkable, because the hash already gets added to the link when I click on it. So Internet Explorer 6 people rejoice. You've got a thing that jumps around a bit. Awesome. Works. Don't give them more. I mean, the love we give IE6 is really bordering on necrophilia at times. It's just... I'm just tired of people putting extra effort in. I'm sorry. So, in JavaScript then, one big trick. Body, class list, app, JS. Out of a sudden, I know I'm in a JavaScript environment, and I need a different styling. And then I get the navigation element with the query selector again, the article and the link. And then I add a class of called current to the article and to the link. In this case, the first one of each of them. So when I go to the page for the first time, the button will be dark and not light like the others, and the first article will be shown. In the CSS, I have this class now. I can play with this .js class. So instead of just having that article stacked with a certain height, I now set it to a width, I position it absolutely, I move it up 700 pixels off the screen, and then I put this transition in, coming back to that. Body.js article current, when the article is the current one, the position is absolute still, but the top is zero. So this means even if the browser does not support the transition stuff, it just shifts the content accordingly when you click on it. That's the whole trick that's happening there. And it's all in CSS, and it's maintained in CSS. If in the future they don't want the thing to drop down from the top, but from the left, you don't have to change your JavaScript, and that's a good thing. Now, transitions are absolutely magical beings, and it's amazing how many people are just still scared of them. They work in WebKit, they work in Mozilla, they work in IE10 now, I think. They might come in Opera, they will come in Opera, because they're so wonderfully useful. You put all of them in, WebKit, Mozilla, Microsoft, O, and then the transition in case all of the others are finally going the way they should be going. And in this case, in 0.8 seconds, it should just translate from one style to another.
And this is powerful because you don't have to do any calculations. You don't have to do any forms, any for loops, because the CSS parser goes from one state to the other. And all you can put in there in the CSS will be animated from one state to another without you and your JavaScript having to calculate, is it really on the other side? And you have all the easing libraries in there as well that we got to know in jQuery and loved. So we're using two variables with the current state is the rest of the trick. An event listener on the navigation element, a click, we test if it has been a link, and then we remove the current class of the current article and the link. We get the query selector of the href of the link as the link pointed to the ID with the hash and ID. We don't have to do any calculation like which link was it, how many articles do I have, which of the articles was it. I just reassign the article and the link variables to the current ones. So I get the article that was connected with it. The link was the target that was clicked on. I add the current classes and I'm done. That's the whole functionality to make the thing move up and down. The paragraph coming in from the side is just another transition with a 1 second delay. You can give transitions delays, so you can actually line them up one after another without having the problems that you have in JavaScript of the counter telling you that was 500 milliseconds, but in reality it was 5 seconds or something like that. It's the browser's job to do that, hardware accelerated in most browsers. So bookmarking in state. So when I go to the page later on and I have the hash fashion at the end, it shouldn't give me the first thing. It should get me back to the place in the page where I was before, like the browser would have done without JavaScript as well. So I just read out the hash. If a document location has a hash, I replace the hash sign with nothing. And then I do a query selector on the document location hash, which is just where it links to. And the document query selector is the link in the navigation where the href is like the clean hash. So that might be a clash if you have like 5,000 navigation items and you call them like link 1, 2, and 3, and 4, and 5, but then you shouldn't be naming things anyways. But it's amazing how you can use a CSS selector for these things nowadays, because that was always a pain to see which one was stored last time, and people used cookies for that. We don't need that anymore. So a trickery for small code here was semantic HTML that even works in IE6. Animations and transitions with CSS, smooth from one state to another without you having to know what the states are, hardware accelerated, piggybacking on existing connections of target and links. I just made an HTML thing that works in the browser and then I used the existing connections in my JavaScript. And now I come to my wishes. So I showed you that native stuff works if you just use it a bit and you think about it before you actually use it rather than just like, let's navigate the whole document and find stuff and then change it and blah. So use what browsers natively give you in your plugins, in your extensions to jQuery as well. Like if the browser does animation in CSS, don't write an animation in JavaScript and send it to it. Just write out a CSS string and plug that into the head and you're done. Plan and architect the solutions. Don't pile on effect on effect on effect. That's what stupid people do out there. I find these websites where you have Dojo, jQuery, YUI, and 5 other libraries in there because they like the widget in each of them, and then they complain that browsers are slow, which is always fascinating to me. Structure your code in cached elements and reusable functions. It's tempting to chain everything into one big chain, but you will use that functionality again later on. So a reusable function with a reusable name that makes sense will help you 2 months down the line when you're actually looking at your own code again. Don't answer any JS question with use jQuery. It's bad enough that people do that with CSS. You're on CSS forums and people are like, how do I make that selector? Oh, use jQuery, there's a plugin. And this is a CSS forum. People want to learn CSS there, so let them learn what they want to learn. Don't write plugins or add methods that cater for edge cases. I went through the newest jQuery and I found like the parents and the ancestors and a lot of like selectors that almost looked like doing exactly the same thing, just one slightly thing bit different. And this is where you get into PHP land. You know, that's where you have 15 functions that do almost the same thing, just with a random order of parameters that you can't never remember. So we really don't want some people to have to read the jQuery docs for writing jQuery constantly. And it's getting there if we just keep doing jQuery. So use what browsers have and give us feedback. Let's fix the source instead of abstracting, because We learned from you that change is necessary, and we actually are happy to listen to people now because we realize it's done us only good listening to people implementing with an abstraction layer. But abstracting into abstraction will mean sooner or later you're going to be redundant because then people will say, jQuery is so big, I don't want to use it anymore. And you have the micro libraries already being written right now where everybody does the same problems we had 10 years ago again and what jQuery already solved again. So go kick asses that really need kicking. We have a lot more things to solve. We have local storage. We have touch events. We have a lot of stuff in these wonderful devices that we have that we pay a lot of money for that we're not allowed to access in JavaScript, and that's just unfair. So looking into these things like device APIs, boot to Gecko, Chrome looking at the input devices of like joysticks and us as well, I want these web technologies to really succeed in building everything with it because they're really easy to learn, they're really easy to understand, and they all done us good so far. So that's all I had. Thank you very much.